Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to Rewatchability, the podcast where we revisit old movies and TV shows to see if they hold up over time. My name is Blaine Waters. With me, as always, is
Robert Larone
and
Jay McNabb.
And before we get into the movie this, to the miniseries this week,
it's a miniseries,
Stephen King's It. We wanted to thank our sponsor, HelloFresh, and thank our Patreon supporters for donating monthly and keeping the lights on here in exchange for the podcast early and some classic episodes.
Yeah, thank God they keep the lights on because it gets scary with them off, especially after watching, you know, clown horror miniseries.
I may never turn the lights off again.
Yeah, we don't have to do this podcast in a basement anymore.
So oh, that's thank good. God.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if this were actually scary.
So this week, we were going to have a guest on. Rob, you want to tell us about that?
Well, I mean, we're talking about It, and, you know, I happen to be acquainted with a scary clown. Jam, you saw this clown in person once, and he
right.
was like,
I was in a storm drain. I was trying to get a boat.
He's like a local clown. We'll have him on at some other point.
You know, one of your local clowns.
You have local clowns. And my town had a local clown, Bucky Wheeler. I delivered papers to him. It's true. And his house smelled like old beer.
Yes, that's another rewatchability shout out to Bucky Wheeler, the alcoholic clown from Rob's hometown. What the fuck are you talking about?
We're using some of the Patreon money to fund his problem in the hometown.
No, but I was going to have Mullet the Clown on because he had me on his show at one point.
You know what? Is he like a children's party clown?
No.
Okay, because Mullet is a scary thing to begin with, and then a scary name for a clown.
I think he's supposed to be like a zombie clown. But he couldn't make it on because I think whenever they make a movie about scary clowns, they get worried that people are going to retaliate, run the clowns out of town. They get all...
Yeah, you know, Tim Curry was just in town for the Fan Expo, and he wanted to come on, but we said, nope, Rob's got a friend who's a zombie clown who really wants to come on.
Well, we're going to have him on for Rocky Horror.
Oh.
Well, then it all works out.
Yeah, perfect. So I thought you meant your clown friend.
No.
Like, yeah, we're bringing him back for...
So this is a great story to start off rewatchability, something that didn't happen. What did happen when you first saw this this miniseries, Rob?
Well, I didn't see it when I was younger. I remember the video, like the cover of it. I remember seeing it in the Walmart, and my friend had it. And I think I'd always meant to see it because I'd read the book when I was like 12 or 13. And it was like a very
that explains
formative.
A lot. Yeah.
I mean, it probably, yeah, I, you know, yeah, it was like a formative.
Oh, I was joking. Oh, my God.
You know, it was like a sort of formative book for me. Like, I sort of realized that I've like ripped it off a few times in my own writing. With the abducting clowns, I should have been obvious.
You have one thing, but you do it well. Yeah.
But I remember it was also like, I think the first real Stephen King book that I read, or the first good one. Mm. And it like, it scared me. And it also like, it sort of was about these young people, or part of the story was about these young people. And I remember, like,
around your age at the time, right?
Yeah, really identifying with it, you know. And, you know, there's the one who wants to be the writer and the one who's pretty fat and, you know.
And the one who has sex with everybody.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll talk about that.
I didn't get around. You just described our podcast. That's great.
Yeah, so, but I never saw the movie, I think because, A, Stephen King movies are always pretty bad, with the exception of, like, The Shining and Carrie, probably.
And Maximum Overdrive, yeah.
But also because I think I was kind of scared of Tim Curry as Pennywise. He's just creepy.
If he was scary as, like, a vindictive hotel clerk, like, it's just, when he's eating children, it's just that much more terrifying to a kid.
Yeah. So I didn't see it until, like, after we had started doing this podcast, and I just watched it sort of consciously to sort of see what it would be like. And I remember sort of liking it, but also sort of being bored by it.
Yeah, that seems pretty fair. Yeah. What about you, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't read the book. I have the book. Like, I bought the book when I was a kid, and maybe I guess I was just too chicken shit to read it, or too lazy because it's really long.
Jam.
Yeah.
Open me.
All my books do that, Rob. But settle down, Harry Potter.
See spot run.
I mean, for one thing, the VHS tape cover was the first thing to scare me about this movie. Like,
just the cover.
Yeah, like, I don't even think I knew that it was Tim Curry, because, like, Clue is one of my favorite movies as a kid.
And the cover is, like, the four pictures by the side and the clown peeking out from around them.
He's, like, tearing, he's like, breaking the fourth wall, ripping the videotape apart.
The fabric of reality.
Soul. So I was freaked out by it. I eventually saw it on a rerun on TV, but I don't think I knew that it was a miniseries, so I only saw, like, the second part. So it wasn't until years later where I was talking to someone about it, and they were like, yeah, you know, with it, it's, you know, the second part where they're adults is shitty, and the first part where they're all kids is pretty good. And I was like, what? There's no kids. What are you talking about?
Jonathan Brandis.
Yeah, no. Totally. So I don't think I had actually ever seen the first part of this movie, which is the only part anyone at all kind of likes. But I remember definitely being freaked out by it, because I was definitely a kid when I saw it. I don't remember having any, you know, I was at that age where, like, if something scared you, that just kind of took precedent. Like, I wasn't in a position to, like, evaluate or critique it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I just remember it being, like, a thing that freaked me out as a kid. And I've always wanted to read the book. I have friends that have said, you know, it's one of their favorite scariest books of all time. So I've always meant to. And now that I rewatched the whole miniseries, I feel like it's ruined it, and I'll probably never read the book.
No.
What about you, Blaine? You're a big Stephen King fan.
I am. Yeah, I've read a lot of his books, especially the Dark Tower series, and that kind of ties all his books into one, you know, backbone.
Span. And you write obsessive fan letters to him.
Yeah.
And you were the one that hit him with that van.
I kind of Kathy Bates him a lot. Yeah, for sure. No, I do. I appreciate him. I also like him because he is, I mean, sometimes he's a bad writer, but he doesn't let that stand in the way of writing books.
Yeah.
And, like, telling good stories. Like, sometimes he's a bad writer in the telling of his stories, but that doesn't mean the stories are bad.
Yeah, he's kind of like Woody Allen. He's like, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing, and I'm not going to stop and, like, make sure it's great.
And some people are going to find some great ideas in there. And, like,
and sometimes it's amazing, sometimes it's not so amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that's what Stephen King is good at. He's like a volume guy, right? Like, he just writes every day for half the day and just churns it out.
Yeah. But I haven't read, like, a new Stephen King book in 20 years.
You didn't read the one where cell phones try and kill you?
I read that one.
I was too scared.
Cell?
I have a cell.
You read that one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was not great.
Why?
It was not.
Were you on a very long flight? Trapped on a campground 6 hours away from land?
You have to turn those off. You're not allowed to watch Cell on airplanes.
But Stephen King is so afraid of technology. Like, Tommyknockers is about nuclear technology, and Cell is
going to be scared of there.
Yeah.
Grow a pair, Stephen King.
Oh, it's so bad. This woman came to my door with, like, a pamphlet about the Scarborough Nuclear Center, and she was like, it's way past its expiry date. They're just renewing it without putting any more money into the infrastructure of it. And I looked at the sheet and there was like a circle of the devastating effects that it would have. And it like ended at Yonge Street. And I was like, oh, and then I'm good. Like,
I you're outside of the blast radius.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What about me?
What about the fallout, Blaine?
That was the fallout area. Oh, okay. It's not a big thing. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's just millions of people.
What about all mutated?
What about Bob and all the evil spirits that will like haunt the woods in our
Never mind. Right. Yeah. Yeah. There was this rash of Stephen King miniseries at this time.
Right.
It was It, The Stand, Shining got remade into, and we've done that on the show.
Right. Yeah.
We've heard Shining versus The Shining, which was no contest.
I feel like the old episodes of the show are kind of like the experiences these kids had in this movie. Like it's just fading over time. Like you have to remind me what we did.
I forgot about them.
My memory's not fully.
I forgot about David.
Every time I enter the studio, a fog comes over me. So I loved the miniseries, and they were an event in my house. I could watch them with my mom, and they were all so scary, but they were network TV and all the
Langoliers.
Langoliers. I watched that one too.
These Stephen King miniseries were real events.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In the 90s.
Yeah. They were huge. He was like the only writer. It was him and Danielle Steele.
Yeah.
Stephen King for guys, Danielle Steele for sensitive guys.
Yeah. When women just didn't read books back in the 90s. Yeah. Good point, Rob. I remember like they would always, you know, promote these really heavily, like on TV guides and things. I don't know if you guys have seen it. There's a really funny promotional image. Maybe we'll put it up on our Facebook page of the cast of this movie, like Harry Anderson and John Ritter. And they're all in like this office. Maybe it was the library.
His balls hanging out.
But they're all kind of posing with Pennywise as if it was like a David E. Kelly like lawyer show. Like, it's just the weirdest photo.
I fucking watch the shit out of that. That's amazing.
My brother the clown.
Instead of the dancing baby, it's just Pennywise in the mutual
Pennywise attorney
bathroom.
At law.
Exactly.
Clown attorney.
Yeah.
He's guilty.
Just sabotaging the opposing lawyers. My briefcase is full of blood.
Yeah. So I remember watching this on TV and really, I mean, liking it and thinking that the end kind of beast was the scariest.
Right, the giant spider.
Yeah, which is laughable now watching it again. Well, yeah. And we'll talk about that.
You guys weren't super scared by it? No?
No.
Well, see, obviously we're doing this because the new It came out this past weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all just shitting on how unscary the story is. And I'm sure we're all going to go see it. That movie this week and just like pee ourselves because I've heard it's terrifying.
I'm sorry, Pennywise, if you exist.
And at the time we're recording this, the movie actually hasn't come out, so we haven't had the opportunity to go see the new one. But we're going to talk a little bit later in the show about that new version.
It was filmed here in Toronto.
That's right. Yeah,
the It House. I passed by it many times. It was very scary.
You passed by It,
the creepy house.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Good. Did you go in?
No, I was too scared. I'm here, right? If I went in, I would be dead.
You'd be dead. Yeah.
That's a good point.
Totally.
If I went in, I would be squatting there.
So in 7 years, I donate. Yeah. Everything would be great. So this is a long, long book. And it was made into, I guess this is a 3-hour miniseries.
Yeah.
Well, it was about 3.5. It was probably like two-hour
movie
TV blocks. So
Three and a half
hours.
Yeah. Did you guys watch it all in one sitting?
No.
Yeah, that would be impossible to do. I don't know why.
I watched it in 3-minute chunks for like a couple weeks.
Right. Yeah. Going to the bathroom, hiding under blankets. Yeah. So this is going to be a hard rundown, Rob. This tests your abilities, I think, as Rob's rundown.
Yeah. Well,
because it's a big book.
I'll do what I can.
Did you stutter come back?
What's happening? I think I'm also getting a bit fatter.
You're becoming all back. The characters in this movie.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, those pigtails are nice.
Thanks.
Like Willie Nelson.
I'm stoned like Willie Nelson. So it sort of starts, you know, in this like suburb or whatever. There's this little girl being called inside by her mother. She sees like a weird clown behind the hanging laundry. Mm. And we don't see what happens to her, but it doesn't seem good because the next scene is a crime scene.
Well, it doesn't seem good because of the music. It's like, chuk-chung.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah, it's like all over the place.
Well, it's half sounds scary and half sounds like super ethereal. Yeah, exactly. You can never tell with these like early 90s scores. Which
Tangerine Dream came on set.
Yeah, like it could have just cut to like a clown waking up after a nightmare. Yeah. This terrible dream. I was in this child's yard.
Yeah, this child was accosting me. It's horrible.
But it's a crime scene, and Tim Reed is there. He's like hanging about, and at first we sort of wonder whether he's like a detective or something.
Yeah, he totally is.
Because he's wearing like, you know, the trench coat or whatever.
Yeah.
But he's just a librarian. He's just always hanging around crime scenes where kids are getting murdered, and apparently there's a lot of them.
Yeah. And they're like, the jerky police detective is like, what are you doing here? You're a librarian. Good point.
Yeah.
That kid had overdue books.
I've come to collect.
Yeah. It's been dead for like 20 minutes.
She owes 20 cents.
You were a lot nicer when you worked at that radio station.
Oh, yeah. We should mention he's from WKRP in Cincinnati.
Tim Reed.
Simon and Simon.
Yeah. Mm. Sister, sister.
Right. Yeah.
Ty's dad on the 70s show.
Mm? Oh,
yeah.
Is that curveball?
That was from left field, yeah.
But anyway, so he is still in this town, and he sort of starts to remember, or he has remembered these things happening, and he starts to call up his old friends, the old gang, and he starts, we see, cuts to a guy riding a guy in a ponytail. It's your classic Stephen King surrogate.
Yeah, Richard Dreyfuss in the
But
it's
also like, I love that they all have different jobs, and there's, you know, like six or seven characters, and at a certain point, Stephen King's like, I can't think of a seventh profession. I'm just going to have to put horror writer. I'm sorry, everybody. I can't think of another thing.
And then I'll make him the main character. Like, I'll make him the one that's lusted after. Like, right. It's just, I will make him the best.
And it's John Boy Walton. Just to make it extra scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is weird because, like, obviously.
With a ponytail.
You know, we're seeing the kids and then we're seeing their older counterparts. So, yeah, I can't remember what that actor's name is, but so did that character like grow a mole between when he was a kid?
It's weird. It's a little weird.
Jonathan Brandis, who plays the younger version of him, also has a mole. Like the same mole.
But I didn't notice that. Yeah.
I think it's like lighter on him, but I think it's there for sure.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not a dream.
It's a cool beginning. I really like the beginning because it's like getting the gang back together, but you're slowly finding out who the gang is as we go on. And I really like that storytelling device. Yeah. I don't know if that's the same in the book, Rob. Do they go chapter for chapter? Because I think the storytelling of the...
I think it's similar. Like, I don't think it goes chronologically.
It doesn't? I thought it did. But I mean, you read it and I didn't, so.
Yeah, but I was like.
Yeah, what's your leg to stand on?
I don't know, just guessing.
Yeah, I can't quite remember. You know, I've been meaning to read it again, but it's hard.
Yeah, because if Stephen King came up with that, that's great. But if the film writers did, that's amazing. It's a great interpretation.
It certainly works for a while, and then after a certain point you're like, how many of these guys are there, seven?
It does, at a certain point it did kind of keep me from getting into the the story of the kids, you know.
And
what
how
I mean?
Many like, of these guys do we need?
Yeah. No, but that's the other thing. Yeah. We don't need that many.
Yeah.
I wish it had been like, I like that device, but I wish they'd, at a certain point, they just let the childhood stuff play out on its own, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, and like you said, the childhood stuff is so great. Like, it, like, set in the 50s.
Well,
and
it's like, it's basically like Stand By Me. This movie is like Stand By Me with a murderous clown.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. And like less great actors.
Yeah.
Though Brandis is okay.
Brandis is great.
Yeah, no, I thought the kids were good.
But it's basically, there's like this whole section where Tim Reed is like calling all of these adults that he used to know and telling them that it's back and have to keep their promise
and
to
one
come
of the,
back.
One of the first things we see is Jonathan Brandis being like, we promise we come back here. It's kind of like the story is told way out of chronological order, which is kind of cool to get us into it. But also you get a bit lost at the beginning, I feel. A little bit.
That's fair.
The promise thing is cool. And I love that everyone answers this phone. They're like all in the best moments of their lives. They're all like, I just sold a building. And like someone else is like, oh, I'm having a hot first date. And
it's true. They're all like super happy except for the one who has the abusive boyfriend.
Except for the one woman in this entire movie.
Well, so let's just run it down because like these characters, you know, they all have their moments where they like confront their like fears or they like mention their fears. years and then, you know, talk about how they used to be, because there's John Ritter plays Ben, who is the one who used to be fat. That's his character.
Yeah.
And
really deep, you know, character.
If they do the second part of the story in the new one, because the new one is just the part with the kids, and, you know, presumably they'll, if this does well, they'll do a sequel. They should cast Jerry O'Connell.
Oh, yeah.
As a reference to Stand By Me, where he was like the tubby kid.
The pudgy kid.
And yeah. Now he's slim.
That's fatphobic.
I'm not judging him. I'm just saying it would be an interesting...
I'm just saying it defines him.
I'm not saying it defines him. Being in Sliders defines him.
Oh, no, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
You can't get out of that. Kangaroo Jack.
Yeah, the highlight of his career, Kangaroo Jack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's also Annette O'Toole is Bev. She's like the girl. And yeah, her fortunes aren't as bright as all the other guys. Everybody else is getting rich and she just has a douchey boyfriend who hits her.
Well, she has a nice job where her boyfriend treats her like garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. But she's like high powered at that job and she's like doing good stuff. So she's like, she's made something of herself. She just has a horrible, horrible relationship with this man.
Yeah.
Which is exactly like the relationship with her father, which she says, you know, later on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, everything's, like, very, like, on point. Like, they confront all... Their lives have turned out exactly like they should have according to their, like, character flaws when they were children.
Yeah, this is like a, you know, a character exercise in a writing class. Like, yeah. This is exactly how it would turn out. Yeah.
There's also Stanley... No, is it Stanley the one who's, like, always sick?
With the puffer?
Yeah. Yeah. He has, what do you call that when you...
Asthma?
No, when you're faking it.
Asthma?
Fake asthma?
Yeah. Asthma. Yeah, and also his mom, like, dotes on him.
Hypochondria?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it seems like they explain it's kind of his mom, and he's caught in the middle of it. And
yeah, that's right. There's a great scene later when he's doing his flashback, which is like probably like an hour and a half into the movie.
Yeah,
where he like goes to the pharmacy, and the pharmacist looks like Bryan Cranston for some reason.
For sure.
And he takes him aside, and he's like,
"Yeah, here's a lot of sketchy guys hanging out in that pharmacy.
This will really fix your asthma." Where he tells him it's just like a placebo. It's water and camphor. And he doesn't believe him. He like tells him the kid can't believe the truth, can't take it. And so even like as an adult, he's still like going into the pharmacy and ordering the prescription for the puffer. And he actually like sees the old man who is the
in the second part.
Yeah. And he's like has like Alzheimer's or dementia or something. And he's like barely there, but he sort of like gets through to him. And there's like a moment where he like recognizes him.
Yeah.
Which is funny and kind of.
But then Pennywise also kind of.
Yeah.
We haven't even gotten to the goddamn clown yet.
Well, I mean, what happens is whenever
this is like an audiobook of
Yeah, this podcast is going to be 5 hours today.
Yeah.
I would do the audiobooks for Stephen King.
Oh, man.
Let's, you know, tag team it.
Well, okay. Speaking of tag teaming, what happens next in the book?
Well, so, I mean, the thing is that every time you're like,
that was the worst segue that I've ever heard you do in this show.
Every time they, like, think of or remember something about Derry, about the town and their childhood, there's, like, a creepy thing that happens to them, like, in real life. Like, the sink is full of blood, or they see a balloon which explodes and is full of blood, or they open the fridge and it's full of blood. There's just blood everywhere.
Or they cut themselves and it's full of blood.
Yeah.
A lot of blood.
Yeah.
There's so much
blood. It's like an advertiser for the Red Cross.
Oh, except for the one kid who was in Can't Hardly Wait. What's his name? Seth Green.
Oh, yeah, he
sees a werewolf, which is terrifying.
Yeah, he couldn't stand to see blood.
No, blood is too much for him.
Yeah, I like that Seth Green's in it. He's a familiar
Richie,
face.
Right?
Yeah.
Beep, beep.
Yeah, he's like the smart ass. Mm-hmm. And he sort of grows up to be like a late night comedian of sorts.
Yeah, Harry Anderson.
Yeah. Harry Dean Anderson.
No. No, but from Night Court fame.
Yeah.
Who is like, I don't know if this problem's really been solved, but I feel like, you know, things around this time, like certainly Joey and Full House, like they couldn't figure out how to make a comedian funny. If they're a comedian in a show, you know what I mean?
Here's an idea. Hire a comedian.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's just saying jokes that are, like, he says, like, I just flew in and boy is my... tail. Something. It's like, yeah, that's a comedian wouldn't say that.
Tired. Yeah.
Like he's not, you know,
it's brutal. I think it's because actual comedians are really depressed. Like they're in their personal lives. They're like, I do comedy to escape from like the drudgery of my life.
Yeah. Like Bucky the Clown.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't escape.
Can we get to the clown for God's sake?
Oh, there's a clown.
Yeah, good.
Well, it's you know, it's the iconic thing with the paper boat and the storm drain and right. The sewer.
I forgot to explain that part. Yeah, it's like Little Georgie, the thing.
That thing that's on billboards everywhere in the city right now.
Well, it's Bill's memory. Like, his, yeah. like, big thing is that he was sick, and he made his kid brother, Georgie, a little paper boat, and they, like, sealed it all up with paraffin wax, and he sent him out to go play with it alone because he was too sick. And that's when his brother is murdered by it. He has his arms ripped off. And obviously, this was somewhat traumatic for him.
Yeah.
In fact, like, at one
point... He blamed himself.
Yeah. When, like, one kid is introducing sort of another kid to the group, because they sort of come together by being... Because they're all being bullied by these older kids. He's like, yeah, don't mention about his brother.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so funny. Like, every kid gets bullied in Stephen King books. Like, the bad guys in this were the exact bad guys in Stand By Me.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like, Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, I expect that. Yeah. Kiefer Sutherland and,
they had the same jackets. Like, the same wardrobe unit, like, fitted them. It was so...
No, except this guy had, like, the craziest haircut. He looked like he was fronting, like, an 80s band.
Yeah.
Like,
Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah, like a cross between Flock of Seagulls and, like, something Danzig would have worn.
Right. Like a Japanese biker gang, like greaser gang. Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy was just a real piece of work. Yeah, that's constantly trying to stab kids. That's not cool.
Yeah, but they also see this clown everywhere. Each one of them kind of sees this clown in different versions of people.
Yeah, yeah, and like they like start to be sort of lured, but they manage to sort of resist it. Mm-hmm. Unlike the other kids, I guess.
Yeah, and we're made to realize that, like, you know, this clown has been there for a long while and surfaces every once in a while.
Yeah,
and that thread is kind of, you know, started with the one kid giving the presentation to the class about what happened in Derry and all these, like, settlers. That
Mike, the young Tim Reed character.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's, like, the historian. And so he, like, brings them all sort of together, and they, like, meet at a bar. Oh, except for their one friend who kills himself and then writes it on the wall dramatically right at the episode break.
Yeah.
And his wife's just like, I don't know what that means. Like, no one's reading this but me. I have no context for what you're talking about.
Well, he probably meant to write more. And it was your fault.
Right. Yeah. It was an accident.
I lost my job today.
Why did you start with it?
Yeah.
I really buried the lead there.
You'd think he would be more hardy since he was in The Thing, right?
Oh,
that's right. Yeah. And you know, I was just watching, I've been watching Transparence.
Right.
And he shows up in the second or third season. I was like, oh yeah, what's this guy from? And I looked him up on IMDb. Oh, right. He's in everything. every movie or TV show that guy shows up.
Yeah. He plays
Richard Mazul, I think his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. I love him.
Great mustache.
Yeah.
And he's great. What's a great moment in this show is he's so funny and carefree when we see him just having so much fun at home with his wife.
That's the funniest part of this miniseries is like when his wife is like, hey, my mom said that we should make a baby, and he's like, well, then why don't we? Yeah. Everything's going our way.
Like, literally 20 seconds later, he gets a phone call.
Ring, ring.
But I like it because I like him, and I like the way he plays it. Like, he just kind of starts, like, twitching and, like, gets very unsettled. And then just goes like, up and kills himself.
I'm going to bed.
It's a good performance.
Yeah.
Kind of a dumb scene. Good performance.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fucking scene in every movie, like in every type of movie too. Like in the action movie, it's like, hey, you're retiring today, and it's like, yeah, you hope nothing happens on my beat. You know, like it's just so stupid. But yeah, he does it well. But yeah, they find out he's dead as all these people converge on Derry.
Yeah, they're all there in the bar,
and they haven't been there in a long time because they're like vegans. They stay away from Derry. We should take a break.
We'll be right back.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And we're back with It, discussing It.
With what?
It.
It's not a guest here. We don't have like a killer clown.
I'm right here. Yeah, we're discussing Stephen King's It, the miniseries from the 90s, and just kind of got to the second episode. So it's
yeah,
it's
perfect.
Right good at the timing. Midpoint. Right at the bad part.
We didn't talk about like the big epic showdown between the kids and It.
Really. Yeah, I mean, right. I think we'll talk about that in the context okay. of the big epic showdown at the end, too.
They sort of happen cool. like kind of one after the other, it sort of seems like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to tell where the chronology is, but they do like they defeat It in the 50s and that's why they're still alive
in
the future,
and they kind of defeat
they didn't just move away. Their parents were like, this is a bad town, we should fucking go elsewhere. All the kids keep getting murdered. Why don't we move our fucking kids?
That's also property rates are so low in the killer clown towns. I believe it.
Yeah, that's true.
That's also the other thing, like in other movies when like several kids are serial murdered, and there's like bedtimes and forests and like you stay indoors after 9, you know, like there are things like go in groups. I guess the one cop does say like stick together, kids. Yeah.
Don't go in groups of less than 7.
Yeah.
Right. Get a girl and a black kid.
That's what you need to round out your team and call yourself the Avengers.
Make sure you all have each other's phone numbers in the 80s. Just saying.
You're going to need it. But they do defeat the killer clown.
Yeah.
Pennywise.
Which
they find out his name because they're looking at old pictures of the town.
Yeah, and that's a cool little moment where they're looking through old pictures and then he like it animates and he like comes near them.
Oh, man, that freaked me out actually because they're holding like a scrapbook.
Yeah.
And he comes right up at the scrapbook. And
we were watching this in 3D.
I was watching this with a clown. It really freaked me out. No, I was watching it on my iPad. So I was holding it kind of like the kids in this movie were holding the book. And when, Pennywise comes right up at the, I thought he might grab me and, I could ask him some questions about the production of Clue.
Which is the important thing there. Yeah. Yeah, but they're kids and their belief is their most powerful asset.
Yeah. Right?
I kind of like that.
I don't know.
And I like the fact that they saw the wolf man, so they got silver bullets, and the one girl's really good at like slinging them. And
yeah,
I
guess like believing in something is a lot better than the way that they defeat Pennywise in the book, which is by having like an orgy.
Yeah, what really?
Yeah, that's right. All the kids.
Sorry, what?
Well, okay.
It's after they defeat him, isn't it?
No, I think that. It's been a long time, but I think that they have the
Let's
orgy
celebrate by fucking
in order.
This clown corpse. Like, what? Why?
No, they don't fuck the clown corpse.
No, over. I didn't even say.
Wait, what is wrong with you?
They're children.
You need to revive on the table.
Playing their children, though.
Nope. Fuck each other. I mean, it's like, it's a weird scene, and it's like, I mean, it's one of the things that makes the book, like, kind of weird and uncanny. Like, it wouldn't be, like, the same book if it wasn't there. But, like, it's weird that, like, an adult wrote this scene where a bunch of, like, 12 to 14-year-olds all fuck the girl one.
Yeah.
Wait, she basically, like, I think they defeat the clown, and then they get lost in the sewer, from what I read. And then, so the girl, I guess, is like, Beverly, I think's her name.
Yeah.
Is like, we should all have sex with each other. I guess they all just have sex with her.
They just, circle jerk.
Jesus.
I guess it's kind of a notorious scene now. Like, I mean, there were articles written being like, the new It's not gonna have that scene.
Yeah, no.
Like,
for
it's
sure.
It's rated R, guys, but not for that.
I actually didn't
stay
know
home,
that about the
pedophiles.
Book.
Wow.
and like, I think Stephen King said, like, he wouldn't put that
I think
scene
by law
in
they
now.
Have to.
But yeah, it's pretty. Yeah,
that's crazy.
But I think
it's kind of crazy.
I guess it's like kind of being like. Like there's something, there's something weird in this book. Like the theme is kind of like
adults are the ultimate evil because they all kind of look the other way.
Yeah, that's right.
And they don't even see the evil of Pennywise. So I think there's something in the fact of like sex equals sexual maturity and mm-hmm. adulthood, and they become adults in that moment and they leave Pennywise and that story behind. But, you know, maybe flash forward 4 or 5 years. I don't know. Something.
They wait till they're all 18 and they're in college and they get drunk and Jesus. They don't talk about it.
But I feel like actually I'd heard about that scene roughly. I didn't know exactly what happened, but, and I read about it after watching the movie, but in watching the movie, like when they all get together as adults, they are like, bizarrely, lovey all dovey. Kind of gropey with Annette O'Toole.
They manhandle her.
Like, she, they, when her and...
I hope Michael McKean doesn't watch this movie.
When her and, was it Richie, the main guy?
Yeah.
When they, like, meet, they just, like, start making out.
Yeah.
And then, at one point, like, they're all just talking about, like, how to defeat this clown, and she's basically just, like, you know,
let's fuck.
Like, nibbling on, like, John Ritter's fingers and stuff. Like, it's really strange.
And she ends up, like, getting together with John Ritter at the end.
Yeah.
But she's, like, she, like, kisses basically every dude in this movie.
And she says something like, you know, that was the day I fell in love with all of you.
Right.
And, like, knowing that this scene was something that's cut out makes that even stranger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's horrifying.
But I mean, I have to say, when I was a younger person reading this, like when I was like, I don't know how old I was precisely, but I was like probably like 13 or 14 when I first read it. It seemed like kind of like honest and not like it was weird, but like it was also like addressing like children are like coming into sexuality.
Right. And you didn't have like the socialized version of sex yet. Like you know.
Yeah.
I assume that you hadn't made forays into that yet yourself.
Well, I was a player. I mean, it was like a weird mystical sort of like adult thing that you didn't quite understand, and like reading it as
so
a
you
child.
Weren't judging it for anything beyond, oh, that's sex, I guess.
Well, I didn't think that it was like that.
Right.
I didn't think I'm going to have to get together with 6 other guys.
Need support.
No, support. I did read like Stephen King saying that, you know, he wouldn't put that in now. People are more sensitive to those kinds of issues now. And saying that he wrote it as to be kind of this like connective tissue. He didn't say connective tissue. And I wish I hadn't brought up the phrase connective tissue, but this kind of like passageway between adulthood and childhood. There's no good way to describe this, but yeah, I mean, I can get, I can get why thematically what he was going for, just from my understanding of it. Again, I haven't read it, but I can also get why the filmmakers in the new movie were like, we're not touching that with a 10-foot clown pole.
There is
Are clown poles a thing?
Did he have a 10-foot clown pole?
I don't know. There's probably a scene with that somewhere.
Show me
where
the clown pole touched you.
It's a long book.
That's the other thing. That's his other weapon other than the deadlights, his clown pole. Let's get back to the topic at hand, which is creepy clowns and not creepy writing.
Yeah, so, but they all did have a connection, because when they came back to this town, they kind of felt each other's presence.
Yeah.
It was this weird sort of, like, sixth sense that they had, having gone through this and defeated this evil, they were somehow joined in that moment.
Yeah.
And not an orgy.
Yeah. We haven't talked about, there's also, like, one of the bullies. One of the bullies gets killed in the encounter back in the day, and he gets, like, sort of sucked in a pipe after he sees the deadlights. That creeped me out.
Oh,
that was creepy. Yeah,
that's scary.
But then one of the kids, like, he survives, but he gets turned into young Jim Jarmusch. His hair goes all white. It's creepy. He starts making independent films.
Do you think that we just make jokes for each other now?
We're not even recording this, man.
But at one point, Pennywise, he's in like the insane asylum when he's grown up, and he doesn't look like Jim Jarmusch anymore. And Pennywise like sort of breaks him out to attack the kids.
And this is the same thing. The exact same thing that happens in The Stand. He gets the kind of bad guy goes into the mind of like a very tortured pyromaniac and then gets him to help him kill the good guys.
I thought you were talking about Stand By Me again.
No.
It's like, I don't remember Jerry O'Connell having pyromaniac.
In The Stand.
Right.
Yeah. Well, in the book, yeah. So it's, I don't know, there's like, it feels like there's so many of his other books in this book.
Well, Stephen King reuses the same tropes over and over again, like boys growing up in the 50s.
And that's why having that Dark Tower series is amazing, because it kind of joins everything and makes me like, oh, this is why that is happening. He kind of explains it.
So, you know, I haven't read all the Dark Tower books, but I do want to see the 80-minute movie. I assume all of that's in there, right?
Yeah. I think there's like 6,000 pages.
I think Matthew McConaughey summarizes it in a all right.
That's the trilogy that they're going to make.
Three. Yeah,
exactly. All right, one, two, and three.
That's funny.
Yeah. So they are connected in a certain way, and now they're all talking about whether they're going to actually try to defeat Pennywise the Clown again, because they're adults and they're like, what the fuck are we doing?
They have the power. And like, Pennywise tells them that like they're too old.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like a casting director. He's the worst.
You should, if you go to a casting, like an audition, and the casting director is dressed like a clown, get out of there. Not a real audition.
No.
But
if they ask you to take off your clothes, not a real audition.
The auditions are sewer grate. And there's seven of you and one female character. But when they defeat it as kids, you know, they're using all kind of kid logic to do that. Like they have like
the power of belief,
silver, like melted down jewelry or whatever that was. Mm-hmm. And because they saw it in a werewolf movie, not a werewolf, that's okay. But it's all kind of like kid logic. So you're like, oh, that makes sense. But then when they're adults, they're like, okay, do we still have that jewelry? It's like, wait, what? You can't come up with a better plan?
Well, this is the thing. So when the one guy...
Yeah, Eddie Spaghetti.
When he gets stabbed by Jim Jarmusch...
That's Mike gets stabbed.
Yeah, when Mike gets stabbed by Jim Jarmusch, he tells him, he's like, hey, I got this silver for you. You know, I dug it out of the wall, went back for it. And they were like, oh, okay. But like,
at that moment,
he's like, I went back to the sewers to get it because he's like, I didn't care if I lived or died because my life's hell. I'm a librarian.
Yeah.
the worst job you could possibly imagine. He lives. That's the other thing. Like, they go to like his house. He's like, oh, we're really in the wrong side of the tracks here. And Mike's like really sadly like, yeah, this is actually my house. And it's like this beautiful, beautiful old home. Like,
I know.
That would cost like $2 million in our city.
It's a fixer-upper.
It's a sweet job. He works at a library. He just reads books.
I know.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, but they treat his like his life is just dog shit.
Yeah, because he stayed in Derry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and other books of Stephen King's was like taking place in Derry, like the Dark Tower touches on Derry, and then also the new miniseries with that guy that lost his hand in the desert. What's his name? Franco, James Franco.
Guy who lost his hand in
127 hours. Yeah.
That's your description of James Franco.
Yeah, that's the best I could do in the moment. And so he's not new, like 11-16.
Oh, there's like eight Stephen King things happening at any given time.
Yeah, no, I know.
And there's a whole Stephen King universe show coming up called Castle Rock.
Yeah.
Obviously his other fictional town.
Yeah.
Which is it's going to be like all the Stephen King stories about Castle Rock plus Seinfeld. It's part of that universe, I'm imagining.
Yeah, that's great.
And Steve Bannon, he's in there too.
The Fraggle Rock.
He lures children to the sewers and devours them, presumably.
Well, he has more time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a pretty good clown.
Yeah. Well, so they decide they're going to, let's after all go and defeat Pennywise. We're here, aren't we? And also, like, our friend got stabbed.
They've lost two friends so far.
Well, he's not dead. He's just in the hospital.
Yeah. But the one's dead, one is incapacitated. So now they have to go down to this creepy sewer, take care of Pennywise once for all, for just the five of them.
Yeah, that's right. And it's like, this is kind of boring. This is like, they go into the sewer again, and they're all just like kind of standing there. And then I think
if they're going to do that, they should do it in The Stand. That would be much more appropriate.
Exactly. Apocalypse.
They see some creepy stuff. Like he sees like his brother. Bill sees his Georgie.
But then it's like armchair psychology to the max because he's like, I wasn't responsible for your death. And he's like, okay. Yeah. And he disappears.
Fight it, Bill. They're always like encouraging him.
Oh, yeah. Bill's so the main guy. Richie's the comedian, right?
That's right.
I keep getting them confused.
There's so many characters. Interchangeable. Yeah. Like they probably could have combined Bill. Ben and Richie into like one guy, a fat guy who writes and is kind of funny.
Yeah, who writes comedies.
It's a good edit. Yeah. Good note. This could have been like a 150 page book.
Lose 7 is a lucky number, make it 4.
Also, that sex scene just got like 60% less creepy.
I don't know if the math makes it less creepy.
Yeah.
So then what happens?
Well, so then Bill gets sort of caught in the deadlights, and Bev uses the slingshot to like shoot the sort of thing, but she misses the first one, the second one bounces off.
We didn't mention it's like a spider monster now.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, which is like weird. There's no clown at all now.
Well, it's like that's what he was sort of projecting. That was like the form that he sort of takes on.
Did he think the spider monster wasn't scary enough? Like, right. Why wasn't he just always that?
I know.
He probably comes from a planet of spider monsters where everyone looks like that, and he's like, well, this isn't gonna scare kids. Like, this is just what normal people look like. Yeah. I'm gonna have to think of something really scary.
It's like Howard the Duck. It's like,
oh my god, monster. What's that thing with the makeup?
Yeah. Like, okay, I'll be that.
Like, that scared me. He's like Batman, you know? He like used his own terrifying.
Yeah, yeah.
That explains so much with the kids and their backstories.
But no, he's the spider. Just be the spider monster the whole time. But okay, so here's my problem with the ending, and I get why this works in a book. Then he becomes the spider monster because it's all the same kind of in a book. But I felt in the movie, the whole thing's building up to this showdown between this character that's so much defined by Tim Curry's performance.
Yeah,
we don't really get the resolution of that because Tim Curry's absent for the whole finale. Yeah.
They like totally disregard video game logic. Like, first you fight him in his first form, then he transforms into the monster.
Yeah.
It's obvious.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, you're right. I mean, we haven't barely talked about Tim Curry, whose performance in this is like one of the like only great things about this movie.
Yeah.
And like Tim Curry, we all love him. He's great in pretty much anything. If there's something that Tim Curry's bad in, please tell us.
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet.
But like his performance in this is like amazing. It's so not Tim Curry, except for like at one moment where he's like, you know, being like the real voice of Pennywise. But it's still like so fucking creepy.
Yeah.
Like, well, it doesn't feel like Tim Curry. He disappears.
He's so arch and over the top, and it's scary for that reason. Like, he's just yelling at people in the library and like laughing so much, and it's just, oh.
And the teeth.
The teeth. Yeah, exactly.
And apparently they wanted, like, originally they were going to have Pennywise have kind of these like built up prosthetics to make him look more exaggerated and creepy. Mm. And Tim Curry didn't want to do that because he'd just kind of gone through all that with Legends.
Right. Yeah. He was so creepy in that too.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But he was kind of like, you know, he said something to the effect of, I think I can do this just as in the clown makeup, I can make this scary. And he made it so scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's great. But yeah, I don't love this ending. So the giant spider monster, first, what's the little guy's name?
Eddie Spaghetti.
He has the idea, like, okay, it's just the power of belief. Like, when we're a kid, I'm going to use my inhaler.
Yeah, but he doesn't believe in the inhaler anymore. That's the thing.
Oh, is that why it doesn't work? Not because it was bullshit in the first place?
Well, it worked in
the book. Are we meant to think that it kind of worked here?
No. Like, it didn't work at all, because he like goes to squirt guy. Just the wrong language. And then he gets picked up by its pincers and crushed. Not to death.
I know that, but I think in the book like it worked a little bit, and then he gets attacked or something.
Yeah, because he still needs it. Like, some part of him believes it, but he knows it's bullshit too, right?
Right.
So it doesn't work anymore.
That's where I feel like maybe it would have worked in the book, where we can hear like the internal monologue. Here it just felt weird. And then what's really disappointing, because again, you're wondering like, how are they going to defeat this ultimate evil? And it's just like, it's almost like Star Wars, you know, and Ed O'Toole's just like, where's the thermal exhaust port on this spider monster?
Hit it in the glowing part.
Hits the glowy. Again, it's like a video game. It's like the boss's weakness.
Yeah.
And she hits that, and then it retreats, and then they're all like, hey, there's like 6 of us. Let's just kick the shit out of it and like rip its entrails out.
Oh, okay. So that's the point.
Brutal.
That's the point where I was like, this is just some monster that landed on Earth or something, doesn't really understand us.
It's hungry.
And yeah, it's trying to bring people in to fight it. And I felt horrible for it.
It comes up every 30 years, has a few kids for a meal and then goes back for 30 years.
I know. I think that's pretty
good. Reasonable.
Yeah.
They used to send sacrifices out in ancient Greece, right?
And they're fucking ferocious. Like, they put their teeth to it. They claw at him.
Oh my God.
They tear out his fucking heart.
Like, who is the monster?
Yeah. They were covered in his blood at the end.
Where's your sense of scientific discovery?
Yeah.
Of wonder.
Yeah, you're ruining that specimen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is this also weird callback to, like, when they beat up the bully.
Because
all the bully's friends are gone. They're like, hey, wait a minute. There's a whole bunch of us and just one of you. So they just kick the shit out of them. It's kind of like the same thing. Like, you're evil and you've got evil powers. But I bet if we just ganged up on you, we could just really punch and kick you until you're just bleeding.
And the thing I don't understand is why they didn't bring any guns or knives or anything like that. They just brought like that one thing. If I was an adult, I kind of believe in the power of a gun.
Well,
the,
like, not in real life.
When
we're Canadians.
When they're walking there, John Ritter says something like, I still say we should have brought a machine gun.
Yeah.
It's like, well, just bring a stick or I don't know, anything.
Something. Yeah, because you probably believe in that more to stop this monster than like a slingshot.
Baseball bat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also the other thing is, like, Pennywise just the whole time is trying to get them to turn away. Like, he kind of fears them. He's trying to scare them away.
Yeah, he knows that they can beat him.
Probably because he's like, I hope as adults they don't figure out that they can just kick me. That's my kryptonite, man. Is kicking.
Oh, man. So there's another one of my favorite moments in this show was because Pennywise has kind of taken over certain people at certain times.
Right.
And John Ritter was like making out with
Annette O'Toole.
Yeah, with Annette O'Toole. And then he like comes away with makeup, which is a great scene.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that so much because he comes away with makeup. He's like, what the fuck? Like, why are you wearing a clown costume? Like, what are you into, girl? And then
took him a really long time to figure out what was happening.
Yeah, exactly. But then it's because Pennywise was like, oh, I read your poetry and I know it was you. And then an editor later is like, hey, I read your poetry. I know it was you. And starts to kiss him. And he like grabs her and he's like, I don't know.
I'll kill you, fucking clown.
No, he goes, I don't know if this is you or that damned clown is in there. Like, it's just so weird. It's such a stupid line. Is that damned clown in there? Like, he's not afraid of him anymore. He's just like, oh, this is such an inconvenience. I've been making out with this clown all the time.
Have you been making out with that clown? It's me or him or one of those other guys in our group.
One of the other seven or six guys. Yeah. Oh, man. So that was another one of my like favorite moments in the movie, just because it was so stupid and very, I like laughed out loud at that moment.
Yeah.
So if you can find it, rewatch it there.
I do want to say, I also think John Ritter is a great actor.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have much of a character.
No, he doesn't do. Yeah.
And he's funny.
He has a beard.
He should be the funny guy. Like,
I know.
No offense, Harry Anderson, but
no offense. It's like later in the show, they're all like, hey, you should write that down. He's like, I'm not the writer. That's not my character. Like, they do that.
I can only be one thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird. But yeah, I mean, what do you guys think of the acting overall? Like, he does not a great job because he doesn't have a great character, but Tim Curry knocks it out of the park. Did any of the others, like,
I thought the kid actors were pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm always a fan of Jonathan Brandis.
I mean, that's your guy.
Yeah. He's your, we've talked about this on the show, he's your hair
avatar.
Role model.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you feel about his hair in this one?
It was sublime.
You know what? I think he'd say that about your hair, too.
I just got a cut, and it's so short. Thank you.
But all the kids are good. They're all kind of natural. And
yeah, that's right. Yeah, like, there's no, like, none of them are, like, stars except for Jonathan Brandis, I don't think. But
and Seth Green.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Seth Green was in everything, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The adults, they fare less well because, like, I think most of them are good performers, but, like, most of their parts are really boring. It's mostly just like, hey, how you doing? You know, remember those old jokes? All right.
Yeah.
Hey, do we got to go kill that clown or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, and because the other stuff's set in the past, like, it's less horribly dated. Like, you know, the 80s-ness of, like, you know, John Ritter's, like, this cool architect with, like, this swank loft apartment, and he's got, like, he's on the cover of Time magazine, you know, one of those superstar architects.
They all are the best in their field. Like, they're all...
Well, they mention that as if that's something that's, like, a part of the town's magic. Like,
weird.
Like, if you Mike left says it, something like... It's no coincidence that all of you left and became like super successful. Again, like, I'm a dog shit librarian.
Yeah, just
that's just what happens when you move to the city. There's opportunities, man.
Like, that was probably like something that was explained in the book.
In the book,
and that's part of the frustration with this miniseries, even at
4 hours almost, you feel like there are nuggets of things that you wish would be fleshed out
and are more interesting than the stuff that they do explore.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
the whole like killer that is released from this insane asylum. It happens so fast. There's no tension.
There's no right. build up. There's yeah, no, I'm sure that's like running throughout the book. Yeah.
I remember that in the book, and I remember it being like one of my favorite parts and one of like the most disturbing parts.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be.
Because he takes credit for, like, the killings, and that's why he's in the insane asylum, but obviously crazy. It was the clown.
Yeah.
Also, these fucking kids never said anything to, like, you know, it's like, yeah, no, he didn't do it, he was just a shitty kid.
Yeah, well, also, when they kill him, they just leave his body in the hotel. Yeah. Like, yeah, we're not going to tell the authorities, but yes.
They're used to cleaning up bodies in hotels. It's like half the job.
Yeah. Oh, and also the other thing, the end, the coda of this miniseries is that, like, everyone ended up okay. Oh, except for the main character's, like, wife, who is in, like, a coma.
Oh, yeah.
Like a walking coma.
Is his wife or his girlfriend?
It's his wife, I think.
Audra?
Yeah,
Audra.
She's, like, the actress or something.
Yeah, she, like, comes into Derry to help him.
Yeah, and gets caught by Pennywise.
Yeah, the dark lights or...
Yeah, the dead lights.
Dead lights, yeah.
But then, yeah, she's in, like, a vegetative state, and Tim Reed's character is like, well, just seems like nothing can be done for her. I guess she'll always be like that.
Yeah, but then he puts her on a bicycle.
Yeah, and his rides old down, bicycle.
And rides down a busy street and is like, come on, come on,
well, come on.
That works with the other kid who was freaked out after going into the house.
Yeah.
The abandoned house.
But it's not like, that's not her memory. I know, that's his memory.
That's what's weird about it. And then the other thing is like, they're almost killed several times by cars.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's like, this is going to save your life.
You're out of a coma in yeah. time to be like run over by a Mack
New
truck.
Coma.
Exactly.
She'll probably get the dead zone thing though when you get in car accidents.
Right, yeah. It's just the weirdest ending to a movie because it's like, and that was the end. They're like, no, she's actually saved. Never mind. It was just, yeah.
Yeah, it was weird.
I didn't like the ending to it.
Yeah.
You didn't like the ending to it.
To it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what did you guys think watching it again this time? Thinking that it held up over time? It's a 90s miniseries. Low production values.
Yeah, I think maybe if I'd watched it like week after week, maybe it would have been kind of like interesting. Like, I've been watching Twin Peaks and, you know, I'm not sure I would want to watch 4 hours of that in a row either, even though I find it really compelling on a 1 hour basis.
Right.
But I think ultimately, like, if you view it like as one complete piece, it's really kind of boring and there's like way too much of like calling back to the parts that we've seen like 20 minutes ago. But some of the performances are good and like, I think that there is some horrific stuff in here, like when the balloons explode with blood. And it's just like, I love when it's like splattering blood all over the place.
Oh, and the people aren't even noticing.
Yeah, they don't even notice. Cool. Yeah, like I find all the horror in this, like it's a sort of mental horror, mm-hmm. a lot of it. Like,
yeah, there are no jump scares really.
Yeah, and you're like, is this happening like in the characters' minds or is this really happening? And so there are parts of it that are like good and valuable. I wish like somebody would do like a fan edit that's like an hour and a half.
Right.
Cut out like half the reminiscing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Cut out half the
a lot of the future part. It's horrible because not horrible, but it's difficult because when they kill the monster as a kid and they have to kill the monster as an adult, it's like, well, they've done it as kids, they should be able to do it as adults. It just kind of takes the stakes out of it.
Unless they like demonstrated more of how like they no longer had the power that they did when they were kids.
Well, sure. Obviously they weren't super successful at it because it just came back. Years later.
True.
They didn't kill it.
Yeah. But they got rid of it.
They didn't realize they could just kick it.
I think it's only been 27 years.
Yeah, its shins are its vulnerable part. Yeah. So, Jim, what did you think?
You know, I think that the story was enough to carry over the awkward parts. I was still engaged, even though it's dated, it's a little silly at times. I mean, this isn't the show's fault, but there's like fade outs to commercial breaks.
Yeah. Folgers.
Yeah. The music was pretty
hacky too.
Oh yeah.
It's but like, I mean,
sort of goosebumps.
You have to put some of that aside in evaluating it.
Yeah.
I still, you know, I think it was a valiant effort to adapt probably a tricky book because it is so long and there's a lot going on.
And the kid sex.
Yeah, good edit. And you know, Tim Curry is just fantastic. A thing like this, I feel like, kind of lives or dies on its villain, and he's terrific.
Iconic.
I would say it's mildly rewatchable for that.
Yeah, I'd say it's kind of mildly rewatchable too. I think it's cool because TV at this time was very just like block off your shot and do it and get it. But there was a lot of like walk and talks and follow shots and over complex terrain to get to like a satisfying like frame at the end. Like they put work into it, and I think it was well directed too.
Sure.
And they must have had a lot of money because Pennywise was terrifying, and that monster at the end was pretty terrifying too. So,
yeah.
So I think it's kind of mildly rewatchable.
I think we're in agreement. It's mildly rewatchable.
Yeah, yeah. Don't put it at the top of your list or anything.
A lot of people are watching this before the new one. Like I saw on like the iTunes top rentals, this was amongst the new releases because people are prepping for the new one.
So. Wow. Yeah. And speaking of the new one, we have a guest is going to come on and talk about the new movie
because she's seen it
because she saw an advanced screening.
She has to go to a fancy advanced screening.
Yeah, exactly.
No so, room for us.
So we'll throw to that right now. So we're here talking with Dila about the new movie, It.
Do you want to let them know who I am?
Yeah.
What is your title, though?
I am, as Alex, your producer, will let you know, I am a social media boss, according to the website.
Boss.
Okay. I'm sitting on a throne with the mods. not right now, on the website.
Okay.
You can go to Antica, meet us, or whatever it is, the people, and you'll see me sitting on a throne. Mm-hmm. I also help produce Fred Kennedy's podcast, Issue Zero. Mm-hmm. So,
and you brought us into the Antica network.
Yes, yeah. I did. I remember meeting you guys well. So that's who I am. Dila. thanks to our relationships with Fred, and Fred has a really good relationship with Warner Brothers. I actually got to see the new It movie last week.
Before anyone else.
It was myself and a few other like reporters and stuff. It was a special like press screening.
Oh, wow.
So what was your experience? Like, first of all, had you read the book or seen the old miniseries before you went in?
I remember seeing the old miniseries. I remember not being afraid of clowns really at all. Like, it just did not, it seemed like the makeup, it just seemed very hokey. Like, I do not remember at all being traumatized.
No. Clowns aren't scary.
I mean, now, since Monday, I feel differently.
Okay, yeah. So what was the new It like?
In comparison to the old one, because we just finished talking about the old one.
Yeah.
I will say this. It is an amazing movie if you like scary movies. Like, if you enjoy being terrified for days afterwards, so that when you see a red balloon, you're just going to, like, jump a little bit in your head and just have to talk yourself out of it, then it is an amazing movie. I do not feel like from the original. I mean, the original was a miniseries, so it was a little bit different. Like, it's different. And I feel like they went somewhere else with this one. Like, this one is, I think it's a lot closer to the book from what I've read. And they have been able to explore and break some of the rules of horror that you're kind of used to. When you think about like horror and like, you know, scary movies, you just like, there's certain rules that you've kind of like set in your mind. I mean, if we've all seen Scream, we know what those are. They do away with those in this movie. Like, you're supposed to be like, scary things only happen at night. Not here. It happens anytime. Literally anytime. There's adults. Right. Just kidding. It's still scary.
And what about like Pennywise? Because we talked a lot about Pennywise in the 1990 miniseries. Yeah, Tim Curry's performance is crazy. Now, when I first saw the images of Pennywise from the new one, I was not impressed. Like, he sort of looks like emo Pennywise. He's like he has like these like weird like makeup lines, and he's trying to be like Jared Leto in Suicide Squad edgy, you know?
Yeah, he looks like they're trying to make him scary as opposed to just making him look like a clown who's scary in context.
So I think within the first 5 minutes, like the opening kind of scenes and stuff of the movie, they set it up so that he is supposed to be kind of, you are supposed to be scared of him because he is a stranger. danger. Like you're stranger danger. Exactly. As a small child, you are supposed to be kind of like, oh, what is this person in a sewer talking to me about?
Don't talk to,
like, warning, don't talk to people in sewers.
Yeah, unless they're ninja turtles.
Unless they're ninja turtles, then definitely they have pizza. Follow them always.
That's true.
Exactly. If, like, man, we got mixed messages as kids.
If it was set in the '90s and he was trying to lure kids in the sewer, he would 100% manifest as a ninja turtle.
That's why he was so successful in the miniseries.
Cowabunga, dude.
Everything floats and there's pizza.
100%. So in this one, what is almost immediately terrifying of Pennywise is that you see him and he is visually scary, but then he's charming. And there's this level of, like, almost immediate manipulation from Pennywise, and that just sets a tone from the first 5 minutes that you're like, okay, well, this is going to be awful for me, who doesn't really enjoy scary movies. I am now going to be hiding under my hoodie, plugging my ears for a chunk of it, which is exactly what I did as a professional at a screening with a lot of, like, famous-ish, you know, critics at the screening, and there was only, like, 10 of us, and one of us was me hiding under a hoodie with my ears plugged.
Well, that probably helped the review of it. You know, they got to be like, look, this is scary. This is, like,
one out of 10 scared shitless.
So, I mean, without giving too much away, like, what was it that was so scary about it? Was there a lot of jump scares? Was it, I know it's rated R, is there graphic violence compared to the TV show?
Yes, to all of those. Yes. Yeah. The jump scares are super intense. We went with another producer on the network. Her name is Annalisa, and she loves scary movies, and she jumped. Like, she was sitting beside me. She was supposed to be my rock. Like, that's why I brought her. I was like, what if I didn't realize, like, going in the night before, I text her, I'm like, what happens if I'm too scared early on? What do I do? And she said, I will hold you. She did not hold me. She was scared.
You need to go with 7 friends. That's the magic.
You basically, yeah, the loser club.
Yeah, watch the movie while huddling in a circle.
Kind of. I mean, not together, that is one of the things. The other thing that there is in it is there is certainly, it's a lot more adult in the sense that there is, and I don't want to talk about it too much because obviously I want people to go see it. Those who, again, preface that they have to like scary movies, that there are some adult themes, particularly around the female character, which is not something that I think even got touched upon in the, you know, in the miniseries.
Yeah,
there is an undertone that almost the adults are also just as dangerous as Pennywise. Yeah. There is a level, this is what I'm saying, like, there's a level of psychological fear and discomfort, because the things that are supposed to keep you safe, which are the adults, may not always be there for you. Yeah. So these kids are kind of left to their own devices while Pennywise the Dancing Clown is coming after them. So, again, does not sound terrifying, and yet horrific.
Well, that, you know, that's something we talked about even in the miniseries. We could kind of see that, like, Pennywise is almost this metaphor for not just, like, adults that are untrustworthy or abusive, but, like, adults that look the other way and ignore that.
That's what happens a lot in the miniseries, too. Adults, like, look the other way from, like, childhood abuse and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. That's what he said.
I can almost see Pennywise as like the ultimate manifestation of like an adult trying to, like you said, almost like there isn't an amount of manipulation for any clown.
Yeah,
with a child, like they're in a costume. They're,
oh my god,
they have a painted smile. Like they're trying to
stop your scaring Rob. Okay,
no, but you know, like a clown is a stranger, an adult stranger trying to insinuate themselves in a children's social situation. So I can see why that's kind of the roots that the movie and the book is getting at is adulthood and is a fear of adulthood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that you're saying that's really strong in the new movie.
I would say that those are all themes that you will probably see manifested in the new movie.
I hate adults. Yeah. Jerks.
Yeah,
I
mean, we should never become
them. No, you I'm should not. Don't do it. Don't do it.
That's scary.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, now we have a support group.
Okay, there we go.
Can all join.
Will you come with us?
I will not see it again. I actually got to interview the kids, too, afterwards.
Oh, really?
On the Friday. And they are lovely kids. They're all fine, which is great.
It's not like, yeah, the
it's great. Guys. It was actually really nice to, you know, see them after you watched them.
Oh my
them.
God, you're okay.
You're fine. I actually wanted to be like, do your parents treat you differently now that they've seen this movie? I did not ask them because they would have thought it was ridiculous. But they were lovely. And
too young to watch it.
Well, some of them had actually originally had seen the miniseries, and they themselves have said how different they felt the new movie to be and how much scarier the new one is compared to the old one.
Wow. Interesting.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on and talking to us about the new It.
You're welcome. I've got lots of thoughts, so whenever you want me, I'm around.
Okay. That's great. Thanks so much. So that's it for Rewatchability this week. Thank you so much for joining us and listening to us discuss It, both the old and new versions. And you can find us on rewatchability.com, facebook.com/rewatchability, at Twitter at rewatchability. And if you want to subscribe and rate us on iTunes, that would help us out a lot too. And donate at patreon.com.
Or else we'll send clowns into your room at night.
No, we won't send clowns in your room at night.
I will send a clown.
Send in the clowns. Send in the clowns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.